So this is the ninth talk in the series on the paramis. And it's on the parami authenticity. And we can call this talk Living with the Truth. And this parami is on the one hand about honesty, being truthful, being straight with what we know, being authentic. But it goes all the way, like all the paramis, at the deepest level to the ultimate truth. And then truth, in the ultimate sense, is equivalent to Dharma. So I think we all know, and I want to start off with something which is very obvious, and we all want to forget it, that it's not easy to be authentic. It's simply not easy. Actually, if we look carefully, we're constantly lying. We are constantly not authentic. A baby can't lie, right? A baby has to tell the truth. There's no lies in a baby. A cat or a dog can't lie. Humans are so influenced, by the time we become adult, we are so influenced by so many voices that we don't know what's our real voice and what's somebody else's voice. We actually don't know what it means to be authentic, because we're not sure if it's our voice or it's just voices of others. Our parents, our school, our society, the newspapers we quote, the books we read. Who are we? So we really can't be authentic, adasof, to the end, in that situation. And we have to ask why that is. And the basis of it is that we are vulnerable. We are vulnerable, sensitive, and easily hurt. And our vulnerability, our insecurity, makes us believe whatever we hear, or a lot of what we hear. Because we're insecure, we believe. We want to believe. And we do believe. And like I say, there's so much coming in all the time. From culture, from schools, from books, from this, from that. And we absorb it, and we do believe it. And it becomes unconscious. And that's why we can't be 100% authentic. And we have to be honest about that. Because a lot of that is simply unconscious. The voices that we hear and come inside us all our life, they become us. So are they true or are they not true? Or are they really authentic or are they not? How do we know? It comes out really, really clearly in situations like the last war in Gaza. There you see, you open the television, and everybody will say, everybody, except very few voices who are ready to stand up and have the courage and say, wait a minute, what is it that we are doing? Everybody, from all political spectrum, will say, we have no choice. We have to do that. There isn't a choice. We're being attacked. We have to defend. This is our role. This is da-da-da-da-da. And I wrote an article actually about this, questioning: do we have? Is it true that we have no choice? But it's just an example of how everyone is caught in a kind of a narrative, a story, called We Have No Choice. And it's just a small example, but very powerful one. We take inside the views of the Eder, the herd. We are herd animals. We're like buffaloes, I don't know. We're animals like Tanim. Last night, I was running in the dark in Klil, and next to me on this side, I heard Tanim going, oh, oh, and the other side, another group going, oh, it was a little bit scary, but anyway, I just suddenly thought, this is humans also. We are like that. We are a herd. We are a group. We all go, one goes, oh, and so everyone goes, oh. And fundamentally, we don't want to be alone. It's difficult for us to be alone and to be rejected by society. And to be rejected by others, and to be rejected by our parents, or by our schools, or by our group, because of, we feel vulnerable when we're on our own, and people don't believe us. And it's painful if we have thoughts that are different from others, and we don't know where to put them. And so we squash them, we put them aside, because it's easier for us to be comfortable and smile like, and say what people expect from us, and think what people expect from us. So we are swept along, and that's why it's really hard to be authentic. We are swept along. And that's why one of the first suttas that the Buddha's teaching teaches us. So first, in terms of introduction to the Dharma, is very often the Kalama Sutta. And the Kalama Sutta is a very famous sutta. And it's called the Sutta, sometimes it's called the Charter, like Amana, of free inquiry. And it's so beautiful because it just stands against all of that. And the Kalama Sutta says, don't believe in things because everybody says them. Don't believe in things because the Skenim with their grey beards, including this one, don't believe in things because the old guys, the Ziknei Ashevet, because those guys say. Don't believe in things because they're written in the old books. Don't believe in things because you read them and everyone's talking about them. But when you observe fully something, explore directly what it is that you know and experience, and it is beneficial to you and to others, then go in that direction. In other words, just try it out. Just experience things. Not believe them. Experience. And go from there. If it's helpful and good, then you know you're on the right track. So we need this independence and autonomy. The last words of the Buddha before he died were just this, so important. The Buddha said, be an island to yourself. This doesn't mean to be cut off, because the whole of the Dharma is about relationships and honesty, truthfulness, authenticity will show us that we're intimate. We're not a self locked away, that we are intimate with everything. So it's not about being a separate island cut off, but it's being steady like an island in the stormy seas, that we sit steady and we are not overwhelmed, drowned by tsunami of everybody else, the world around. We are steady as an island. So I've got a very nice poem that I forgot to send it to you, but I'd like to, some of you know it already, by Mary Oliver. It's called The Journey. And when I read it, it always brings tears to my eyes, so it might happen. But it's just so important to have that courage to step out and in your life, never mind what happens, and be an island and go on your own journey. One day, you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old pull at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers, pried means pulled with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. It's so important, the movement of authenticity, seeking your authentic voice rather than just going with a conditioned mind of others, that is also the basis of the ethics of the monastic community. One of the strongest crimes in the Vinaya, that is the code for monks, is not telling the truth about your experience. It is so, it's almost a crime like killing somebody. Telling your teacher or anybody else the truth of your experience. It is major problem if you dress up your experience saying, I did this, I reached this stage and you didn't. Or I like this and you didn't. In other words, not telling the truth about where you are in your practice, in your life, inside the community. The Buddha said it destroys the Sangha and it destroys spiritual life. And it's one of the most extraordinary theater that the Buddha, in one of the suttas, the Buddha made amazing theater about this. And it was to his son, Rahula. When his son first joined the group of monks and was still young, maybe 7-8 years old, then there's three suttas he gave to Rahula, his son, at different stages in his life. And this is the first one. And the Buddha sat down, and Rahula came and paid homage and sat down on one side. And the Buddha had a little water in a vessel, a bowl. And he asked Rahula, "Rahula, do you see this little water left in the bowl?" "Yes, sir, I see it." So the Buddha said, "Just so is the spiritual practice of those, such a little water, who are not ashamed to tell a lie." In other words, there's nothing, there's so little there. It's klum, it's nothing. Just a drop of water, that's all it is. It's not full. And then the Buddha threw away the water and he said, "Do you see that little water thrown away?" "Yes," said Rahula. "So, Rahula, those who are not ashamed to tell a deliberate lie have thrown away their spiritual practice, their monastic life as monks." And then the Buddha turned the vessel upside down. "You see, Rahula, this vessel is turned upside down?" "Yes, sir." "So, Rahula, those who are not ashamed to tell a deliberate lie have turned their whole spiritual life upside down." And then he turned it up again. "And do you see this empty vessel, hollow, with nothing inside?" "Yes." "Even so is the spiritual life of those who are ready to tell a deliberate lie. It's hollow and empty." And then he said to Rahula, "Someone that's ready to tell a lie, there is no end to the ethical problems that will come from that." He basically said, this is the key to ethics. So pretty heavy for a 7-year-old boy, but I guess he really got it, the message, after such theatre from the Buddha. But it's the basis of Sangha, and it's the basis of clarity, because you can't have clarity. And the whole of the Dharma is about being clear what it is that you see. And you can't have clarity if you cover it over with non-authentic, with covering over, with hypocrisy, tsviut, with pretending to the teacher that you're already at a certain stage and you're not. Everything collapses. So it was really, really important to the monastics. So it's something very important for us to consider. It's a bit like the emperor's new clothes, the story of the emperor's new clothes. You all know the story. Yeah. That we have to be ready as authentic explorers of reality. We have to be ready to be the boy and say, "Never mind what everybody says that the emperor has new clothes. I know he's naked." And we have to be ready to acknowledge that. We have to be ready to be honest and authentic with what it is we see. Because that's such the basis of authentic, real awareness. And the image of the people who don't do that, who are led by views that they don't know that they have, like the example of, I don't know what, the war in Gaza, views about the emperor that he's got clothes on, believing views of others, views about the Buddha, views about everything. If you believe them, it's like a row of blind men, where the first person is blind and all the others are blind, and each one is holding the one in front, and they're somehow going through. The row of blind men, each one hanging on to the one in front. And that's a very, very powerful image. So it's the basis of inquiry and awareness, this parami, the basis of our awareness, which is what I really know. And that's why we do so much work with, for example, the breath and the body. Because it's quite not so easy to lie about the bodily experience. You can very easily lie about a thought, a view, an opinion, an explanation. But it's less easy, it's more authentic to be with the body, and that's the training that we go through. A lot of the training we go through is not to develop body awareness for its own sake, but to develop a skill in seeing things without lying, directly as they are, without tivuch or opinions of others or parshanuyot, commenting thoughts about. It's not dressed up.
How can we know if we see it?
I'll come to it. So usually, the authentic knowing is covered over by the three poisons. What covers authentic knowing is the three poisons. And I mentioned one already, the poison of three poisons, greed, hate, and delusion. Greed, the wanting, the needing, the having to have, the desire, and so on. Hate is the aversion, the not wanting, the negative, and delusion is the ashlaya, the unreality. So we can see that, I already mentioned how fear, because we're vulnerable, which is the second hate or negative, we believe others. We believe what people say to us, because we're vulnerable. We don't have the courage to be totally to be an island. So we believe what people say, it's rather more easy for us to live like that. I remember a small example. I had the good fortune, as I've said before, of having some of the most important life-changing experiences were in the 60s. And the 60s was very radical, at least the group I was involved with. And we made, in a way, quite a big change in culture. And it was based on this, in a way, which is, what do we really know? And what do we really see? But I then had a problem, which is, do I go back into society after many experiences that kind of disintegrate, mefarek, my world, the ordinary world that was, everyone says this is reality. So, do I go back into society, or do I stay out on the edge? And I had a scientific background. So do I go into Ma'abada and become a scientist and work in research, mechkar rufui, medical research, like a good boy, after going around the whole universe and going back into, do I stay out on the edge? And I made the decision to go in, to go back in society and finish my doctorate and so on. This wasn't easy because of exactly this point. And I decided that I had to do that and bring an alternative voice, or some what I felt authentic voice, into a big atzaga, a big game, belief system called science, which has so many negative problems and issues. I decided that I would rather be authentic inside. But I remember the difficulty of that decision, which is really hard for me, to be authentic in the middle of, and it was much more comfortable to stay outside and be a hippie and stay out there and have a good time. And no, I went back into society and struggled with professors and with people, you know, with the academic world, and I'm still struggling with them, by the way. just yesterday, having arguments on the email about mindfulness and the academic world. So I'm. So a delusion is one of the poisons that will stop us being authentic. Delusion, hashlaya, tzviut. I am right is fundamental delusion. My views are right. What I think is correct and others are wrong is fundamental delusion. And greed, ego, I believe in me. Because of my need, I'm going like this, I'm thinking like that. Comfortable dharma, for example, is greed. But the truth is challenging. It takes things to pieces. And comfortable dharma is standing against that. You go to California, this is why Christopher always grumbling about California, because he's radical, and when he goes to California, he disturbs people. Because he asks them, do you really need to live like you do in California? Do you really need to buy and take your possessions so importantly? And, but if you penetrate with respect and intimacy into your experience, it always cuts through all of this. Like the Kalama Sutta says. And one of the places which can be very helpful is to really begin to see all views as simply views. And one of the places of experiencing truth is to be able to see that what you think is just a view and is built by others and isn't the ultimate truth. And that's important. All your thoughts, all your opinions, all your conclusions are the result of conditioning, and therefore they're just a view and not the absolute truth. You can never know if you're right. You can never say I'm right and others are wrong. Because everything is based on context. I have an old friend that I knew from the 60s. And we have constantly arguments about this. And he always says, but the truth, you can't say that the truth is 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4. You can't say that. What, 2 plus 2 equals something else? 5. So there must be an absolute, your views, your thoughts must be in some way absolutely right. You say, no. No, they're views. In a certain context, everything is questioned. It needs a person, a view, a Western view, and a view of numbers, a view of measuring, a view, many, many things in order to say 2 plus 2. So nothing is absolutely true. They are views. And the Buddha said, when you know this, you protect the truth. The truth is safe if you don't believe your views, if you just say it's a view. The whole of the Dharma, all the suttas, You know how they begin? Exactly. They don't begin by saying, the Buddha said absolute true. It says, kaha shamati, this I have heard. Every single tenth of the 10,000 suttas starts like this. This I have heard. In other words, I just heard it. It is not the absolute truth. Something I heard. Take responsibility for something is of view. If it's useful, if it's helpful, go with it. If you explore it, go with it. But don't think of everything as the absolute truth. That just doesn't exist. So it's safeguarding the truth, but it isn't the ultimate truth either. When you say, my thought is just a view, you are, according to the Buddhist teaching, you are protecting the truth, but it's still not the deeper truth itself. So I want to go to a deeper level. The deeper level is saccha. It's the Pali word for truth, or satya, which is the Sanskrit word for truth. Satyagraha was the word for the movement of Mahatma Gandhi, and satyagraha means the power of truth. Truth has a power. It's a good word. And so, on a deeper level, and the parami, when it goes deeper, becomes ultimate truth. Like every one of the paramis, when they go deeper, becomes ultimate. Mukhlat, it becomes something to do with awakening. And the first thing we have to understand about truth is that it kind of blows away concepts, thoughts about things, all of which are views. So the truth just blows it all away. The truth, they can't stand up against truth. Truth, when something enters the human mind, the truth tends to just throw it out. So, for example, a thought we recognize as just a thought, not believing in the story. As soon as we believe the story, we've lost, in a way, deeper truth. If we see it as story, something we are attached to, and something that we like or hold on to, we're in the world of truth. We see a thought, we see a story, we see the way we attach to it. There's a truth in that. We believe in the story, we lost the truth. We are in the world of conditioning, we are swept away. We believe that we know. It's full of conditioning. Belief of stories come from other people, so we believe other people, what they say, what all the voices from that, as the poem says, are holding on to our heels. Machsikim et ha'ekvot et ha'ekevim. Ekevim. Hold, don't let us move. The again and again and again, the Buddha said, after a lot of suttas in which there's a lot of discussion about what it is that we know and how we know something. And the Buddha again and again at the end of the sutta says, after all, awakening is when you realize the ultimate truth with this body and penetrate with wisdom, this body. Penetrate lachdor. So, ultimate truth and the awakening is when you penetrate this body, this experience, with wisdom, rather than believing any story that arises, that it needs penetration, it needs going into it. This body. And it needs us to look deeply with the eye of wisdom, of clarity. And when we look deeply, we ask, what is it that I really know? Is it true? Like Byron Katie question. Yeah, she's really nice. She's developed this very useful process. Anything that comes up, and it's anything that comes up, any thought, any conclusion, any view, anything at all, a pattern, a story, a perception, an impression, anything, is it true? And is it useful? And so you're back in truth, the territory of truth. You ask that question, is it true? Or you can ask a question differently. What is it I know, really? What is it I really know? And it cuts through everything. It cuts through everything. When we look at ourselves, we say, do I really know what is this thing? Okay, it's got a name called Stephen. Do I really know what is this thing? Can anyone say what it really is? Can anyone say what is any label? I am this, I am a Buddhist, I am a soldier. I am a policeman, I am a lawyer, I am a millionaire, I am a mother, I am a father. Do we know what that means? Do we know what it means if you, I am happy, I am not happy, I am unsuccessful, I am not successful, I am a victim, I am a teacher, I am a spiritual teacher. We don't know anything. Do we know what these things are? Do we really know? Do we know the masks, the masachot that we put on ourselves? The labels? Do we know facts? Is there such a thing as a fact? Davar? Uvdot? Do they exist? When you look carefully, you cut through the lot. Because you begin to realize everything is a view. I was interested to read, partly because of this course, I think, I don't remember exactly when, but I started to read some things on time. I think it was on the before the wisdom class we had. And I read also what some very deep thinkers, philosophers and physicists say about time. Like Stephen Hawking, and others. And they all say the same thing, which is time is something that needs a measurer to measure. Once there's a person, a consciousness, that has an interest to measure, then time is created. Without anyone interested in measuring anything, time disappears. I mean, and that's something we all, you know, we all base everything on time. For example, when we talked about when I get there, that needs time. I want to be enlightened then. I want to change now, then. I'm on a process, then. It's all built in, time. We forgot, but it's so automatic. When we look at everything and ask, what is it we really know, this kind of seeking the truth blows away. It blows away all the concepts, all the facts, all the. And it isn't easy. Not only is it difficult to be authentic, what I said before, it's even more difficult to align ourselves, to mechavenet atzmenu, to the truth. The Buddha kept saying that Dharma is difficult to see. When it's why he didn't want to teach. After his enlightenment, he didn't want to teach. He said, the Dharma is too difficult. It's subtle. Everybody is caught up in their views, in their thoughts, in their conclusions. It's too difficult. I can't do it. It's exhausting to even imagine teaching, because the Dharma is subtle and revolutionary and breaks the form of the society and the concepts and the agreements on what is reality. I can't do it. And the Brahma said to him, do it for those that have little dust in their eyes. In other words, there's something many of us do have some clarity about what is truth. Do it for them. So it's subtle. It's in a way under our experience. It's not our experience. That's why it's difficult to see it. It's under our experience. The truth is behind our experience. Our experience comes out of the truth. So our experience, we can say, is my experience. But the truth that gives rise to an experience, we can never say it belongs to me. It's the source. I am a result of truth. I don't own truth. Truth owns me, you. We can never own the truth. Truth can never be my truth. We belong to the truth. Truth doesn't belong to us. And it's not easy. And along the way, in the search for truth, there can be a lot of confusion and paradox, nigudim, and doubt. But don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Geshe tsar meod, meod, al tefached. Don't be afraid. It's only fear that actually stops us here. We can be in uncertainty. We can be in doubt. When we ask questions, what do I really know? And it takes to pieces what we think we know and our world of comfort and conditioning. We can feel lost. It's okay. We can feel doubt. Safek. But that's really helpful. Because doubt is just telling us that we've shaken up our comfortable world. That's all. You know, there's a Zen phrase that says, little doubt, little awakening. Middle doubt, middle awakening. Great doubt, great awakening. And the search for truth, which starts with authenticity and carries on to become a search for truth, why it's difficult is because we realize that we're living so many lies. And the lies are Maya. Maya is illusion or delusion, is the Indian word for living a dream. And a dream is a dream of conditioning, hatnaya, in which we think we know things. And when we cut, the truth cuts through Maya. Maya is a world of pretense. Yumra, is it the word? Yeah. And we need the courage to keep going and say, what is it I really know? To be innocent like a child, that a child can't lie. So we look at our body, what it is I really know. We look at our mind, what it is I really know. What is the truth of things? Just using language, we're already in a way lying, because we are making form of forms which we then have to believe in to some extent. But the truth is that we can still use language and know it doesn't... We live in truth if we use language, but know it, the language itself is not the truth, but points to it. If we know that, we're back in truth. You know what I mean? If we still use language, but know that it doesn't represent, it can never represent truth, because it's a form, we are back in truth again. Because we understand that language is just Maya, is a dream world, that that's all we've got to communicate. So we use it as a convenient tool, but it's not ultimate truth. What the language says cannot be ultimately true, because it's a form based on agreement. Therefore, it's conditioned. Famous quote from Chuang Tzu. Chuang Tzu said, a language can never tell you reality. Show me the man that's given up words. I want to have a word with him. So it's very deep that I want to have a word. We still need language. We need language, and we use it. So I want to have a word with him means, okay, I know that language can never be itself the ultimate truth, but we need it. So I'm having a word. Let's have a word with each other, like we're doing now. Also. So basically what I want to say, that it's truth is the ultimate refuge, the final word. It's the ultimate home. Truth for us is the ultimate home, where it's the island, and the Buddha said, it's the island that of safety. It's not in the world of illusion, of Maya, of delusion, of non-authenticity, of not knowing what we know, of being lost in thoughts, concepts, views, opinions. It's a safe place. It refers to it's an ultimate place. It's really the only place in the end of safety and of liberation. It's not personal. We shouldn't forget it. It's an impersonal place of just truth existing. It's like we open the doors to it as human beings. We can open the doors to truth. They don't belong to us. Thank you.